Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is Second Helping After Dark, late night edition of Second Helping here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend and co-host Brent Beard. Brent, it's never too late in the evening to talk nope. Southeastern Conference football, is it?
Never, never. And Trav, guess who's up?
Chino's always up. Chino's always up for some Southeastern Conference Absolutely. Conversation. So I'm not surprised our show mascot dutifully doing his thing here late on a Monday evening, but certainly a lot to get into, Brent. And boy, just like when it seems like we're getting a few answers to the questions at this late stage in the regular season, then it feels like we get a few more. We answer a few, then a few more possibilities seem to crop up, especially where that college football playoff out on the horizon sits.
I think this is the ultimate goal of the college football playoff, is to keep people interested. And I can tell you, in a little over mid-November, it really is. I mean, when you've got Texas and Texas A&M with one loss, and Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and Ole Miss with two, not knowing what's going on. I mean, and Trav, I think that was a goal. I mean, people are they're on their edge of their seat for every play. They're holding their breath. They want every information they can get. You know, should you go to the SEC title game or should you not? So is that kind of what the people who put this together, I think that's kind of what they wanted.
Well, especially now at 12, because at 4 it had been expanded, like the field, in terms of the buzz and the talk. But you were still probably thinking 6 to 8 teams at this point would still be legitimately maybe 8. Now you're looking at, 15 or 16? And even beyond that, when you talk about the automatic qualifiers from leagues like the ACC and the Big 12, especially the Big 12, and then the G5 perspective on all this and the possibility for teams that we've seen in the 4-team college football playoff getting bumped for maybe a Big 12 champ and or Group of 5 representation. So, yes, so many different scenarios still out there. And by the way, we appreciate everyone who has stayed up with us, chiming in here in the live chat. Our guy Tex Titer offers a hearty howdy, boys.
Howdy.
Little Joe C is also here in the show chat, repping the Alabama Crimson Tide. If you'd like to jump in the show chat, we'll get to your comments and questions as best we can. But Brent, what we typically do here is we work through the previous Saturday on the Monday edition of Second Helping. Then we'll come back later in the week here on the channel and we'll preview, really get into the upcoming week of action. So with that, we're going to start from last Saturday in Fayetteville, Arkansas, where the good news for Sam Pittman was that his team was not fed another 60 burger by Steve Sarkisian and the Texas Longhorns. Actually, Arkansas, pretty good job defensively, I would say, for the most part. The problem is it was largely overshadowed by that defensive effort of the Texas Longhorns, which is pretty amazing considering some of the losses Texas had from that defense a year ago, especially on the interior of that defensive line. But boy, they're just doing it in different ways. They are disruptive. They are dynamic. And they had 6 sacks against Arkansas last Saturday.
I will remember for a long time when you and I were talking about a conversation you had with Pops, of all people, that there was an Alabama-Florida game about to commence a few days from then. Pops was really excited about Florida being able to throw the ball all over the field and the receivers and the running back trap that they had. But the what you told him was, well, Pops, I have one question. How is Florida going to block Alabama?
Yeah.
And listen, Trav, I don't care how complicated that people want to make this game, but that is the thing that stuck out to me. And in the Arkansas-Texas game. Arkansas had no room to run. They were not able to get a pass off before they were being harassed. And Trav, sometimes it's almost as easy as that, is it not? Who again, in this league, who controls the line of scrimmage is going to win the game.
It is. And I thought Arkansas's backs weren't bad. Jaquindon Jackson back in the lineup, 11 carries, 56 yards. Rashad DeBinion, okay. It just feels like at times Bobby Petrino has to get the quarterback involved. He has to have the quarterback in the middle of things. And look, it probably didn't matter because at the end of the day, as you said and we talked about before, I just don't think Arkansas had any chance of blocking Texas
on
Saturday. And I think Sark kind of called the game that way. Yeah. I give him credit too. Because as an offensive guy, it's hard for those folks sometimes to kind of hold their tongue when they want to dial it up. But, you know, it was just an efficient performance from Quinn Ewers. 20 of 32, 176, couple of touchdowns. Arkansas made one trip inside the Texas red zone, made good on it, but even with that game at 13-10, and understanding anything can happen, especially on the road, you just didn't really sense panic from Texas. Was it a offensive performance for all time? But at this point, I think Sark understands full well the drill is to keep winning games, and so Texas is able to do that. Now Texas gets Kentucky in Austin coming up this week. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the week. And then, of course, that showdown with Texas A&M in College Station a couple of Saturdays away. Let's talk about the Auburn Tigers. An explosive performance for this Auburn offense. You kind of thought this might be coming because even though ULM on paper looked like a team that, relative to previous years, was having a good season, not really coming into that game last Saturday, maybe playing its best football. Auburn has been pretty random. Mostly it hasn't been good on the offensive side of the ball.
Right.
But this was kind of the 1-2 punch I think a lot of Auburn folks envisioned on a consistent basis, where Peyton Thorne in the passing game and then also Jarquez Hunter in the run game able to get it done against an inferior opponent, but still – I don't know. Maybe this is a starting point for this offense. It's awful late, but
yes,
with Texas A&M and Alabama coming up, not a bad time to do it.
Well, and you've got to believe, don't you, Trav, that these wide receivers for Auburn eventually are able to step up if Thorne can get them the ball, one being Mr. Coleman, who had three touches. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Eight receptions for 100 yards, had a great one-handed catch in the third quarter. But to me, the thing that's keeping Auburn in every game is they've allowed 74 rushing yards per game and limited the quarterbacks to less than 50% percentage in the last four games. So that offense not able to do much, and I'm sure that defense is it gets frustrated, but it keeps the offense close enough to where they can open something up that they might can win one of these latter games.
Yeah, maybe. And we talked about that, too, in relation to what Alabama we'll talk about the Crimson Tide coming up here in just a little bit. Who Alabama has coming up? A couple teams defensively that can make Alabama uncomfortable in terms of making maybe Alabama more one-dimensional than it would like to be. But it was all Auburn on Saturday against this ULM team. You talked about it, wide receiver play. Keandre Lambert-Smith probably been better than anybody realizes. Yeah. That was a nice pickup for Hugh out of the transfer portal. Coleman with that breakout-type performance with the three touchdowns. I think he entered the game Saturday with two. Had three on Saturday. Malcolm Simmons, another newcomer with a solid performance and a touchdown grab to his credit. So we'll see exactly what this means. It's been hard to put a finger on that, Brent, with this Auburn team, because we thought maybe Kentucky was a performance that might signal something bigger and better coming for this team. That didn't really play out that way. So we'll see exactly what unfolds for the Auburn Tigers with Texas A&M set to visit on Saturday. A feel-good win, another one of those for the Kentucky Wildcats on Saturday. Kind of knew this one was coming, a bad FCS team in Murray State making the trip to pick up a paycheck in Lexington, and it certainly played out that way. Kentucky wins easily, Brent, 48-6. Brock Vandergriff, Cutter Bowley, the two quarterbacks combined to complete 22 of 33 passes for 313 and four touchdowns. And the Wildcats also run for nearly 270, Brent, on the ground.
Boy, they needed a performance like that. And oh, as you said, and oh, by the way, your reward is get to play Texas in Austin next week or this week. So, but regardless, Vandergriff just needed some good work. He needed some good results. The defense played better in all, really in all phases of the game. It was a complete win for them. And look, I don't want to belabor this point, but I think there, until we get to the end of the season, we probably won't know this, but there is still, you know, a lot of speculation, Trav, that, and again, Mark Stoops is not going to get fired. He's just done way too much for that program, and I think he's earned a chance to be able to fix whatever is going on. But I think what I'm hearing now is more just, well, boys, do we sit down at the end of the year? Say it's been a good career here, but we all need to move on. So that, look, and as this thing winds up, that's something we're hearing more and more at Lexington, whether it actually happens or not.
Boy, if I'm Kentucky, that would have to be more on Stoops' side if we're going to go, because that, if you're Kentucky and you're mutually okay with that. To me, that's a leap that you might be taking there. It might be a little bit forgetful in terms of where you were before Mark Stoops, at least on a year in and year out basis.
No doubt.
Rich Brooks and Guy Morris, some other guys that have been in that spot, did some good things at times, but the consistency year in and year out that you've had with Mark Stoops now. You are certainly in a different era of Southeastern Conference football now, too. I mean, you're going to get a taste of that probably this weekend in Austin. So, it'll be very interesting once we get to that point. You still have the potential, I guess, to get to bowl eligibility. Mm-hmm. That's going to require a win in these next two games. Austin this week wouldn't seem to be the place that Kentucky gets it, but – you know, we saw Louisville, I think, lose in overtime to Stanford, who's not a good football team.
No.
That was on the road. So maybe you're able to get it done there in the rivalry game against the Cards to cap the regular season. Also on Saturday afternoon, you had, speaking of FCS matchups in the Southeastern Conference, the Alabama Crimson Tide, Brent. I think all you need to know about this one is that Alabama played five quarterbacks.
That's right.
I think that kind of sums it up. The Crimson Tide, as expected, dominant over the Bears of Mercer, 31-7 at the half. Actually, Mercer did a nice job of moving the football
in the
first half. But, boy, this Alabama defense has ramped up the opportunistic traits that you want to see from a Kane Womack defense. Brent taking the ball away three more times, turning one of those into the defensive score. And then in the second half, really flexing its muscle. I think it was 26 total yards for Mercer in the second half on just 13 plays.
I tell you the thing I see about them. Now, they could have, and we've seen this before, I mean, even sometimes with the Nick Saban coach team, to where they don't take these games seriously. There's not a lot of energy. They're just kind of out getting a tan on the bench. But you had none of that. Saturday, they played well in every aspect of the game. There was high energy throughout. They had their head up. Their posture on the sidelines was
good energy.
You just can't help but notice that. I mean, every quarterback, Dylan Lonigan, I thought was was rather impressive. Ty Simpson had a play, if people didn't see this, where he was almost sacked, but he ducked under, came back and threw a pass basically to the goal line. And Bama ran the ball well again. I thought Jalen Milroe played within himself, had just basically the right amount of runs and passes, which is probably around 15 to 20 passes, 10 to 15 runs. But look, the group you talked about, Trav, and I know you've written and talked about this group, is that the defensive line, the linebackers particularly, or have just frankly been amazing a lot of ways. They keep getting a lot of turnovers. Trav, this to me is a totally different football team than what we saw in September.
It appears to be, no doubt, with a lot of that coming as much on the defensive side as anything else. They continue to take the football away in bunches. And yeah, it feels like up front, they, and in their front seven really in general, they are very much in tune with now who they are, what they're supposed to do,
yes,
when they're supposed to do it. They are identified as a really good defense right now. So we'll see what it all means with the road trip to Norman, huge trip to Norman coming up on Saturday night. And speaking of which, Little Joe C here in the show chat asks, when was the last time Alabama played Oklahoma and did Alabama win? My recollection was the Orange Bowl in that 2019 college football playoff. Remember? Survived Georgia. When Jalen Hurts came off the bench for an injured Tua Tagovailoa to lead the Crimson Tide back, went down and took on Kyler Murray and the Sooners with Lincoln Riley. That was a bit of a shootout. Alabama won that game pretty convincingly. Unfortunately for Alabama and its fans, wasn't able to capitalize in that national championship game out in Santa Clara against a white-hot Trevor Lawrence and the Clemson Tigers. But as far as on campus, you got to go back to
Dennis Franchione.
2002 and 2003. Oklahoma in 2003 made the trip to Tuscaloosa, Mike Shula's first year. And that previous year, the last trip to Norman, you're right, Brent. Fran, the head coach at Alabama at the time. Me and Pops made that trip back in 2002.
Right. I remember that.
We went out to Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. We watched a little AAA baseball because that matchup was, you know, early in the season. It was blazing hot in Norman that day, as I recall. Might be a little cooler. Might be a little cooler in late November on a Saturday night, Brent.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I remember that game. I was covering a Florida State game and was able to tune that game in. I think Tyler Watts was the Bama quarterback. During that time, and they really they kicked a late field goal and went ahead, and frankly should have won the game. But Oklahoma came back and won in that game. And Trav, I remember being at the Oklahoma game in Bryant-Denny.
Yep.
With Franchione, Bama rallied at the end and helped me on this, and actually tried an onside kick that they almost got, and then they tried a hook and ladder.
Yeah,
that almost worked. Oklahoma still won the game, but I remember for some reason that the fans giving Alabama a standing ovation at the end of the game for almost winning that game.
Yeah, that was probably the only one the 03 team got.
Yeah,
but no, you're right. Alabama absolutely played OU off their feet. And that was a season in which OU and LSU visited Bryant-Denny Stadium.
Yeah.
The LSU beating in 03 with Nick Saban,
yes,
that Alabama got, that may have been as impressive of a road team performance, total performance all around. I'm not talking about LSU offensively in 2019 at Bryant-Denny. I'm talking about just joyless murder ball when it used to reside in Baton Rouge with Nick. Mm-hmm. That game, you just never felt like you had a chance. Now, the Oklahoma game that year, as you pointed out, it felt like Alabama had an opportunity. LSU did not afford that to the Crimson Tide. in that same season. So for Alabama, it's on to OU. That was a good Mercer team at the FCS level.
Sure.
9-win team doing some good things, going to participate in the FCS playoffs. What about the Florida Gators, boy? There are big wins, and then there are big wins. And for Billy Napier, that was a big one for a couple of different reasons, mainly because I don't think it's been a secret. I know we've talked about it going back to the Miami game, that any path that really Billy Napier had to another season in Gainesville was tied to DJ Lagway.
Yes.
And so for Lagway to come back into the lineup and play the way he did, that was huge. I mean, it was as big as it gets. That being said, this Florida defense and the turnaround it has made over the last four or five games, didn't see that coming, especially with the injuries. But what was it, seven sacks?
Yes.
Of Garrett Nussmeier. And boy, here's the thing about this league too. When the book gets out on you, where you're deficient, in certain areas, especially in pass protection, guess what? It's going to keep coming and probably twice as much. And boy, Florida got after Garrett. That was not a good look for LSU really throughout the game.
No.
Brian Kelly kind of brings some of it on himself with the animation on the sideline. And when things just start to go a little bad, the cameras just go straight to Brian Kelly.
Yeah, they know they're getting something.
And they should. Because the guy starts turning, you know, as purple as the purple in their uniform at LSU. And it kind of was amazing to see all of the scrutiny shift from one sideline to the other, from Billy Napier now to Brian Kelly, really over the course of a football game.
Oh, yeah. And coaches yell at players. But it really attracts the television camera.
Oh, wow.
When the players are yelling at the coaches.
Kyron Lacy had a little something for Brian Kelly, it looked like.
Yeah. I think Brian Kelly's eyes got rather big with that. And a little first of all, Brian Kelly with his, what is it, Trav, $60 million buyout is not going anywhere.
No.
But look,
not after, yet.
No. After three losses in a row, and the thing that was so impressive, this secondary that could not tackle you and me and Chino versus Texas kind of combined for 93 snaps and did a credible job. You mentioned the seven sacks. That was one more than LSU had allowed the first nine games combined. And boy, you called attention to this. Jaden Baugh a few weeks ago, that kid could be special.
He's their back. He's their back right now.
And
Montrell Johnson's going to be an early round pick. It's not that Montrell Johnson has regressed. It's the injury situation has been a problem for Montrell Johnson. But Jaden Baugh, I don't care who else they've got.
Yeah,
he's too good at this point to keep off the field. Florida ran the ball just 17 times in the game. Didn't really have the ball. LSU had the football for most of that game on Saturday night. But when they did have it, they ran it 17 times for 113 yards
and
two touchdowns.
And look, this and as long as you and I have been covering this league, when you see numbers like this, Trav, it's almost a mathematical impossibility to win. But LSU ran 92 plays and Florida ran 43. That's what and Trav, some of those were kneel downs. Look, you know, how often do you see something like that? And the possession was 41 minutes to 18 minutes. You talk to me about being efficient, but Florida was.
It felt like the Gators circled that game.
Yes.
Because they held all those guys out, or they were out.
Yep.
Maybe they didn't hold them all out. But the Texas game, that was essentially a white flag. We're going to take one.
Yeah.
We're going to take one in Austin.
Right.
But we're going to get Elijah Badger back. We're going to get DJ Lagway back.
Yeah.
We're going to get guys like Damian George back. And then we're going to take our best shot here down the stretch. And it continues on Saturday. You know, there's a couple of games coming up this week, really a couple of three that are very similar to me. Alabama at Oklahoma.
Yep.
Ole Miss at Florida.
Right.
Texas A&M at Auburn.
Absolutely.
All three of those teams very much in the college football playoff race. All three going to go on the road as solid to significant road favorites. I don't know if all three come out of the weekend unscathed, though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, I've thought a lot about that, too. And I would agree with that. I mean, for instance, even with all the problems Oklahoma's got, and look, I know Alabama has the clothing that will take care of them. But look, when you're on the road, you're at night, you're in Norman, and Trav, if it's going to be 60 and 40s here this weekend, what might it be in Norman Saturday night? And you know, those are the intangibles, and I'm not a big intangible guy, but when you're not used to that kind of cold, I mean, it's just things like that that kind of add to the mystique of these games you just mentioned.
Yeah, and the key to all three of those games, boy, the quicker you can get out,
yes,
the better you're going to be, because in any of those three games, we'll talk about them later in the week, you just do not want to be playing up night or all day. You just don't want that at all. So for LSU, I guess at this point, Vanderbilt in Baton Rouge this weekend, that's not a gimme.
No.
And then Oklahoma will make the trip to Baton Rouge the following Saturday. So interesting here for the Tigers, to say the least, down the stretch. What about also in primetime on Saturday night? I said last week I was buying in on Lenore Sellers. I'm glad I bought in when I did.
Really?
Because I think that stock was already on the rise. Mm-hmm. And after throwing 5 touchdown passes and for 353 yards in a game that was a thriller, I mean, it had the fourth quarter that you love to see in a game like this. 31 combined points between Missouri and South Carolina in that fourth quarter at Williams-Brice Stadium. But Sellers, one of the big heroes on Saturday night for the South Carolina Gamecocks, Brent.
I tell you what, he was, and he continues to grow and mature. So does Shane Beamer. I mean, since the start of the 22 season, Trav Beamer has 6 wins over top 25 teams at South Carolina. I don't know a whole lot of people that really saw that coming. I mean, just even since mid-October, 4-0, 2 top 25 wins, averaging, you know, here's what's amazing. What about averaging 35 points a game? Trav, when we saw that offense in September, did we think that'd be any way in the world they'd be averaging 35 points a game?
And Sellers alone was just under 400 yards between passing and rushing. So you got your quarterback. You are set at quarterback for the foreseeable future. If you're the South Carolina Gamecocks, going to win at least 8 now. Might win 9.
Absolutely.
You know, going to pick up the 8th win this week against Wofford. And then it comes down to Clemson for a 9th win. Mm-hmm. You think Clemson's jazzed about that matchup with the South Carolina team? I wouldn't be right now. No. And again, a South Carolina team that on the road has been probably even better than at home.
Oh, yeah.
So, good stuff for the South Carolina Gamecocks. Missouri now. Interesting to see how the Tigers fare here down the stretch. And look, here's the thing. If you're South Carolina, too, you can say you pretty much took the best Missouri could give you, because Brady Cook threw for 237.
Really?
Nate Noel ran for 150 back in the lineup.
Yeah.
DOE, 6 catches, 85 yards. Mm-hmm. Luther Burton, 8 catches, 69 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
You got pretty much Missouri's best punch Saturday night, and you were able to survive it at Williams-Brice Stadium. What about the big one from last Saturday, Brent? The Georgia Bulldogs fall behind 10-0 to the visiting Tennessee Vols. It looks like the Vols are going to break that long losing streak.
Yeah.
To UGA, but boy, that second quarter, the Dogs found it. To me, and there were some important plays throughout the game, I understand that, but down 10-0, We saw Carson Beck deliver a ball to Dom Lovett on a crossing route that turned into an explosive play. For me, that seemed to really ignite this Georgia offense. And that was really the Carson Beck we were expecting to see really throughout the season. And again, we talked about the drops from his receivers, the in and out nature of that offensive line. And even with when it does have its first five, that's not exactly an elite Georgia offensive line by the dog standards. No. But hey, folks have been all over Carson Beck. We've questioned him this season as well. Give the guy his credit. Throws for 347 and two touchdowns. And also the spreading of the football. London Humphreys, yes. Dom Lovett, all the tight ends. I mean, three different tight ends made big plays in this game. It was exactly what Georgia needed offensively from its leader.
I'll tell you what, in Tennessee had not allowed any more than 20 points in the game. So that made it even more impressive. And to your point, another play that made a difference for Beck. Trav, you remember when he broke three tackles and got a first down? I think that shook some of the cobwebs a little bit too. And look, they did this thing, without some guys. And Dylan Bell and wide receiver left the game. Trevor Etienne was ruled out still, but they were able to come back. The offensive line, as you mentioned, did better, did not allow a sack.
Rattledge in there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, against one of the better defensive fronts in the entire league. It was Trev, I know this sounds simple, but it's really true. It was a Kirby circle the wagons back against the wall game. Listen, Kirby's not losing a game like that, is he?
Hey, Atten, really. And I give Mike Bobo a lot of credit, man.
Yeah.
That's a guy that attracts a lot of criticism from that Georgia fan base. Sometimes I'd say, yeah, it's been deserved, but Mike had a really nice plan because that is a Tennessee defense that loves to fly, loves to get downhill, loves to be aggressive. And I thought he did some things to slow down that flow and actually make the flow work against the Tennessee defense. Red zone had that nice touchdown pass to the tight end off of some perimeter action there off the snap. So give Mike Bobo his flowers as well. And now the Georgia Bulldogs feel like they're right back in the middle of everything. Tennessee offensively, I didn't think Nico was really bad in the game. Now, his long completion only covered 17 yards, but even that, I feel like Tennessee right now, between injuries and some other things, just not good enough on the outside. When Miles Kitzelman, a former third or fourth tight end transfer from Alabama, kind of leads you in receiving yards, that's probably not going to be good enough. Dylan Sampson, we talked about the importance of him. He goes for 101 on 19 carries and a touchdown. I know some Tennessee folks felt like maybe Heupel got away from him a little bit too much, or the run game in general. But Georgia kind of just took that game over after falling behind 10-0. And it really started with Beck, and not just throwing the football, as you said. When he makes plays with his legs, that seems to energize his teammates as well. We see it in the NFL every week with guys like Josh Allen and even Geno Smith yesterday for the Seahawks, had a big run late in that game for the Seahawks against the Niners. So Georgia right there, and UMass this week for the Dogs, Brent, before another sneaky regular season capper with those pesky Yellow Jackets at Georgia Tech. So,
by the way, I'll throw this out, my last comment on Georgia. Since the start of 2017, Kirby Trav 45-1 in Athens.
Yeah, he tends to do pretty well there.
Yeah,
at Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. So as we wrap things up from last Saturday, we're going to talk about the Aggies of New Mexico State and the Aggies of Texas A&M. A mature type of performance, I would say, Brent, from Texas A&M in a 38-3 win over the visitors from Las Cruces. You know, if you can't have Diego Pavia in your quarterback position anymore, if you're New Mexico State, a name like Santino Marucci. I love it.
That's perfect, isn't it?
One of the quarterbacks that New Mexico State ran out there Saturday night, but Marcel Reed, very efficient for the most part, did have an interception. Amari Daniels, we talked about the importance of him, and really E.J. Smith, too, because of Le'Veon Moss out now for the foreseeable future. Reed also getting it done with his legs once again, running it four times for 41 yards. Just really what A&M needed before it goes on this road trip to Auburn this week. And then, of course, the big one with Texas and College Station in 2 weeks.
Well, that would be my thing, would be how focused will they be? And that will be a challenge for Mike Elko to keep this team on the straight and narrow as they're peeking over the horizon, looking at Texas. So that's the thing where you probably got on campus, they're all talking about Texas and trying to get them focused on this game. But to your point, they've got to be able to do that because this is a very, very dangerous game for them. But I give Elko and this coaching staff a lot of credit. I mean, Trev, do you think they'd be 8-2 and 5-1 at this point? That's more than impressive a performance for them.
Yeah, I would have thought more 7-3, maybe 6-4.
Right.
But, you know, there were still pieces there, you know. And so good job, no doubt about it. And we'll see if the Aggies can keep it going against Auburn coming up on Saturday. We had some teams on the bye week, going to jump back into action. Some important games in terms of, let's say, Mississippi State trying to win a conference game this year, because I don't think that's going to happen against Ole Miss in the regular season's final weekend. So Missouri visiting Starkville this weekend. Jeff Lebby might want to get it done this weekend.
Yeah.
We'll get into all that a little bit later in the week. Before that, though, we've got the college football playoff that'll dominate discussion here in the next few days. Maybe the committee learned something about just stacking undefeateds.
Really?
Because we saw one of those lose to a 3-6 team at home Saturday night, BYU. I don't know. It'll be interesting, Brent, to see maybe how this sort of stacks up here and really how the two loss teams in the Southeastern Conference are regarded.
I tell you what, you've got some very interesting games outside the conference. I won't go into great detail, but just to mention them for our folks to kind of whet their appetite. Notre Dame and Army, people thought, who in the world cares about that one? But Notre Dame looking to be playoff bound. Army is having a season that they have every 25 years, maybe, or something like that. SMU, Clemson, Miami, all in the ACC run. We will see how real that Indiana is that they face Ohio State. A lot of people looking forward to that game and where that game could go. I tell you what, keep your eye on this Tulane team that is – that is really playing well. That has been a tremendous job of that coaching staff. And you've got number 14 BYU and number 2-1 Arizona State. And the reason quickly we bring this up is kind of what Travis said a few minutes ago. These are teams, Trav, right, that are just outside that 12 mark. SMU's 13, BYU's 14, A&M's 15. You got Army at 18, Tulane's at 20. So because of what we're following here for now, a 12-team playoff, all these games are very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like what you're going to get is Big 12, one team, ACC, one team.
Yep.
SEC, four teams. That's halfway there. That's six.
Yes.
You're going to have the group of five.
Notre Dame,
that's eight, and so
four from the Big Ten,
and that should be your 12, shouldn't it?
I think
when it's all said and done, depending on how the SEC championship game plays out, with a two-loss team more than likely going to be in that game. Do I think five SEC teams potentially should be in the college football playoff? We'll see. Next couple of weeks, and it's not just in the SEC, as you kind of outlined there. Indiana, Ohio State could have major, major impact on how many the Big Ten ends up getting in there. Notre Dame still has SC, I think, on the road.
They do.
So,
oh, yeah. Yeah. SC
could be a spoiler at the Coliseum here in a couple of weeks.
And one more for the road here. I know you remember this because you and I talked about it. There was a time in his career, there was, and I mean, nobody hotter than Tom Herman. You remember that? As an offensive coordinator.
Precipitous fall.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. And he was fired today at Florida Atlantic. I feel for the some of the guys there. I've got a friend who actually has a grandson that's playing on the offensive line or going to be next year. So he's having to deal with the fact that the head coach is gone. But understand Herman may have been looking for a coordinator job somewhere. But Trev, this is a – it's not easy, but being a being a coach in college football – when you look and see where, Herman with what, Texas, Houston, Florida Atlantic, and now looking for a job with the, and this guy was, and I mean, he was as promising of a, of an offense coordinator we've seen in years.
Yeah. It's, it was almost like Herman was taking the Lane Kiffin revitalization.
Yeah, really.
Path. Going to FAU, turn it around there. Maybe you parlay that into a mid-level, lower-level SEC job, right. Something like that. But it didn't go that way. And also what we're seeing, too, is a lot of these offensive guys, like Dana Holgorsen, now the offensive coordinator at Nebraska. Right. We saw Chip Kelly leave UCLA to be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Maybe Tom Herman, as an offensive coordinator, is in the – immediate future here for him. So yeah, it's tough, not just in the SEC or at the Power Five level. They will fire you everywhere.
Well, absolutely. But the good, if there is a good thing about it, Trev, you can still take home some generational money if you're in the right position.
You sure can, no doubt. I think even at Purdue, if a change is made there, you're looking at a buyout of $10 million.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's Purdue. So the money is not bad. Not bad to go away. Hey, Brent, as always, a lot of fun here with you here on Second Helping. We certainly appreciate everyone tuning in as well. If you haven't already, subscribe to Ryer on YouTube. Hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. We'll take a thumbs up, a like, if you don't mind. That would help us out tremendously as well. And Brent, in just a matter of days, mere matter of days, we'll be back previewing a large weekend in the SEC.
Appreciate folks staying up late with us. Travis and I are, so some nights we're night owls, and other nights it feels like we need to be in the bed by 8 o'clock. Oh. This is rapidly
becoming more of the latter. I never thought I would see it, but
it's here. I'm sure Pops is getting a chuckle out of that from
both. Yeah, I mean, right? he stays up to 1 a.m. watching Gunsmoke every night.
No.
Yeah, he's a night owl. I never saw that coming with him, but
here we are.
That's
great.
All right,
Brent. Next week.
Yeah, we'll do it here in a couple of days and get you ready for week 13. Will it be unlucky week 13 for some in the Southeastern Conference? We'll talk about that more in just a couple of days right here on Second Helping on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Until next time, so long, everybody.